Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. I write about food, and my favorite part about what I do is finding out the stories and meeting the people behind great recipes, restaurants, and more. And every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air, bringing the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life by interviewing some of the most interesting women in the world of food. You can listen to the show live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org or download it anytime on iTunes. Today, I'm so happy to have Elizabeth Carmel of the Hill Country Barbecue Restaurants and the website Girls at the Grill in the studio. And in the second segment, I'll be talking to Suzanne Rousseau, one half of the Jamaican sister team known as Two Sisters and a Meal. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, Julia.
Thanks so much for being here. Elizabeth's going to be part of the 12th annual Big Apple Barbecue Block Party, which is coming up this weekend in New York City. And actually, Suzanne is in town for Caribbean Week. So I'm really excited to talk to both these great women about the energy they're bringing to this very food-filled week in New York. Just say that five times fast.
Right.
So, Elizabeth, before we jump into everything Big Apple Barbecue related, I would love for listeners to know a little bit more about you. So where are you from originally?
I grew up in North Carolina.
And how long have you been? Well, you're not in New York all the time. Is that right?
You know what? Nobody's in one place anymore all the time, right?
And where do you divide your time between?
Well, funnily enough, my country house, in quotes, is in Chicago. So I grew up in North Carolina, you know, typical suburb. You can't get in anywhere unless you have a car. And I just fell in love with big cities. And so I don't own a car. I don't drive. So really, that's my beach house is in
city.
Chicago. Right.
Good
right.
for you. I just went to Chicago for the first time ever. And I can't believe it took me that long, but it's such a beautiful city. So
it is. It's gorgeous. In the summertime, actually, I even like it in the wintertime, but the summertime is just spectacular. And it offers almost everything that New York offers, but at a slightly calmer place.
Yeah. People are a little bit nicer, I found. But
I think they're nicer in New York, actually, but friendlier in New York.
Yeah. That's
because,
good to hear.
Because in New York, we're all displaced, right?
Exactly.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, not you.
When you were growing up in North Carolina, was your family into food?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I say that food is the purest form of communication. Mm. And I think that's probably because just intrinsically the way my family communicated was through food. I mean, I grew up in a family that, you know, at breakfast time, you're talking about what you're going to have for lunch and what you're going to cook for dinner.
Absolutely. That's the only way I know.
I know. I mean, it's so great. And my father doesn't cook, but he was a great researcher. And my mother is a fabulous, fabulous cook. And, you know, her mother was a fabulous cook. And my dad was a great eater. But the really interesting thing is, you know, he would take us outside of North Carolina a lot when we were kids to go to museums and to see a little bit of, you know, the rest of the world and how other cultures lived and to eat. Mm. And he would do research. And we'd go to a restaurant and he would say, you have to order, you know, French onion soup because they're famous for their French onion soup. And I'd say, but I don't feel like French onion soup. And he'd say, but that's what you have to order because that's what they're famous for. And now as an adult, I'm exactly that
way.
I love doing the research and I'm like, but you have to order that. That's what they're famous for.
I always think when traveling somewhere and going to places knowing they're really famous for something, and then I think, like, they do have, like, a whole rest of a menu.
Right.
Like, but, you know, that should just be the French onion soup restaurant.
Right.
So being in this family with the sort of attention to food and your dad especially, how did you end up, sort of what's your story? How did you get into restaurants?
You know, it's so interesting. So I was actually pre-med. And I come from a medically oriented family and a very educationally oriented family. I have fewer degrees than anyone else in my family. So I'm the educational failure. But
I bet you're the only pit master.
Yes, I am. And they all sort of, I have one sister who's a clinical psychologist. And I have another sister who's an OBGYN, and I have a much more fun job. You know, I can tell you that. And maybe even a more fun life, because, you know, my job and my life sort of, you know, they're blurred edges, because food and wine is so much fun. But basically, I was a chem major, and I was, you know, headed down that path. And then I decided, you know what? I have too many creative interests. I have too many other interests. And, you know, I don't really want to spend the next 8 years of my life in med school, because I don't know that that's really what I, you know, want to do. And I discovered that food is really chemistry.
Absolutely.
And I could go out to a restaurant, and I could come home and recreate it.
That sort of makes so much sense to me, because later in the show I wanted to ask you a little bit about what goes into the recipes, because you run, well, let's just jump right there. You are the executive chef behind how many restaurants? What's the number?
Well, there are two concepts. Yeah. So it's Hill Country Barbecue Market and Hill Country Chicken. And the thing that's so different about both of the restaurants is that I started the restaurant with the founder, Mark Glasserman, and he is very entrepreneurial, and I'm very entrepreneurial. And I think that if it had been a group of people that had lots and lots of, you know, sort of career restaurant experience, then Hill Country wouldn't have happened. Hill Country Chicken wouldn't have happened, because instead we created it like we were planning a party, you know, like we were building a house.
That's so great.
And I think the beauty of it is I create all of the food, you know, the meat, the sides, and the desserts. And the meat is really based on the style and the tradition of barbecue that you find in Central Texas. Not today's
in
Central...
the Hill Country.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Not today's Central Texas, but, you know, even the Central Texas of 10 years ago is different than it is today, because there are a lot of young guns, which we can talk about. But anyway, because I do all of the recipes, it's sort of like, you know, 360, one person's point of view. And so I think that's really why it's been successful, because, you know, it was very important to me that the restaurants feel transportable. Like, you know what? You're homesick. You're missing the South. You're missing Texas. Well, guess what? You don't have to buy a plane ticket. Just walk in the
Go
front
to 26th
door.
Street, yeah.
Right.
I actually, one of my best friends, Lizzie, is from Austin, Texas, and she was the first one to introduce me to your restaurants, and it was before I met you. And knowing that she approved of it and she felt home there made me feel like you were doing something right, which I've come to really understand is accurate. So I think Lizzie, that's definitely her seal of approval.
That's
counts
great.
For a lot. So, and you're, yeah, so there's one in Manhattan, there's one in Brooklyn, there's one in Washington, D.C., the Hill Country Barbecue Market.
Yes.
And then you've also got the Hill Country Chicken restaurants, both in Manhattan and Brooklyn.
Exactly.
So you're talking about five places, all with tons of food. And so I imagine that is so interesting to know about your chemistry background and in making food that can be made over and over again and get the same result. And that must have come in so handy. That's so fascinating.
Well, you know what? So basically, I closed my eyes and I, you know, taste memory is so important, right? Because, you know, barbecue and fried chicken are foods that people are very emotionally connected to. So when they take a bite, you know, it has to transport them back to their grandmother's table or, you know, their aunt or their mother or their next door neighbors or something. And probably the best way to explain this phenomena is with green bean casserole.
Okay.
I did not grow up with green bean casserole. However, I knew that it was America's favorite Thanksgiving side. And I'm talking about the cup of can green bean casserole, right? It's green beans, it's Campbell's mushroom soup, it's, you know, turkey fried onions, right? Which was obviously created to, you know, by manufacturing companies, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Three of them,
yeah.
Together, in concert together. But I didn't grow up with it, but I knew how important it was to America. So I created my own version of green bean casserole, and I used French cut green beans because I think that they're fresher and they're better than the canned green beans. And I made a bechamel sauce with fresh mushrooms, and I added a little cheese for richness. And the first time I made it, I did that. I fried the onions, and I served it to someone who had grown up with it. And he said, you know what? This is good, but it doesn't taste like green bean casserole. And I said, come back tomorrow. And this was one of our investors who had grown up with it. And I said, I know exactly what's missing. The familiarity is missing. So I made my exact same recipe, but I added one can of Campbell's cream of mushroom, and I went and bought the fried onions in a can.
So you didn't, like, you weren't making, like, fried shallots or something?
No,
like,
but that's what I did the first day. That's what exactly what I did the first day. The second day, he swooned. He asked to take home the whole pan of
that
it.
That is so funny.
After the tasting, and I knew we would have a hit. And to this day, it's, you know, it's one of our top sellers. I mean, people come in for that, just for the green bean casserole. And, you know, we still make a bechamel sauce. We still saute shallots and fresh mushrooms. And, you know, it's French cut green beans, but there's one can of that soup.
In every batch.
And there's those fried onions. And, you know, and then on the other hand, another side that we're really known for is the white corn, the Choupeg white corn pudding. And that was based on my grandmother's corn pudding, but with a healthy dash of cayenne because we had to travel from North Carolina to Texas.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say it's sort of so interesting because you're making so many traditional dishes and that are speaking to this very specific place in the world and in the barbecue sort of lexicon, but this is not a place, you're not from Central Texas, you're from North Carolina. So
right.
It's sort of taking on the authenticity of somewhere else, which has been sort of like a running theme in the show and talking to a lot of women who cook and who cook very specific food that's either something that, you know, all across the board, it's everything someone loves. So whether or not it's where you're from, translating that experience for other diners is
right.
sort of a fascinating.
Well, and luckily, I mean, first of all, I'm so glad I grew up in North Carolina. And I have relatives in Texas. My sister lives in Houston. I love Texas. But the great thing about North Carolina is I really feel like North Carolina is the seat of Southern cuisine. Now, all those Southerners out here listening to this, you know, are going to, you know, disagree with me, but I really believe North Carolina and Virginia is really where the traditions of Southern cooking really sprung from.
That's so great to hear. I'm able to agree with you because
okay.
I'm from New York. So
okay, good,
I think,
good. Agree with
right.
me.
I want to talk a little bit about your website, Girls at the Grill, which I know is the first non-corporate sponsored food website, which is sort of amazing. You've had it for more than a decade. I think it's a really important thing for Cherry Bomb readers to know about. Tell us what it is. If you summed it up in like one sentence, what does the website stand for?
Well, you know what? I basically fell in love with grilling and barbecue because Weber Grills was my client. I did culinary initiatives, marketing, and public relations for them. And, you know, I love to problem solve. So, you know, one of the problems that they had was that nobody understood grilling in the United States. If you can believe this was 18 to 20 years ago, that's so shocking because that's such a small, you know, amount of time. But anyway, chefs and food writers didn't get grilling. You know, they had to write about it once a year, just like they had to write about cooking a turkey for
sure,
Thanksgiving,
yeah.
right? So I decided, well, I know exactly how to solve this problem. I will teach them how to grill. And then they'll see just how many wonderful things you can make on the grill. My adage is, if you can eat it, you can grill it.
I love that.
So,
is it a bumper sticker?
Yes.
I want it to be.
Right, right. And so basically, I started going around sort of grassroots and teaching chefs and food writers. And I wasn't about to teach famous chefs about flavor. So I created this technique called the grilling trilogy, where if you know the difference between direct and indirect heat and how to use it, all you need to make great tasting food is olive oil, salt, and pepper. And you can find out more about the history of the grilling trilogy on my website. But anyway, I would go to these famous chefs' backyards, teach them, you know, just have a bunch of food, olive oil, salt, and pepper. And I couldn't believe how excited they were. I mean, they're calling their friends, oh my God, I finally learned how to cook fish or whatever. And I'm like this little pipsqueak doing this. And so I realized, you know what? If I can do this for people who already know so much about food, I bet that I can get women into the backyard and to use this as an everyday cooking technique. And that was really the idea behind Girls at the Grill. And gas grills really allowed me to do that. And the interesting thing is we all have this, you know, sort of mental image of the guy building the fire. And men love gas grills, too.
That's so, I mean, I just love, I think the information you provide on the site and the stories you've been telling for over a decade now are wonderful. And the fact that a woman is behind all this, I think, is just great because it has been this male-dominated thing. And we just applaud what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
We are almost out of time, which is crazy. But I'm going to run into the Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A, which are the 8 questions we ask every guest. So before we have to say goodbye, number one, sweet or salty?
Salty.
Two, what did you have for breakfast today?
Oh my gosh. I was up crazy early to do Good Morning America. So today it was a whey protein shake.
All right. That's okay. What are you reading right now?
You know what? I just finished the book, Where Did You Go, Bernadette?
Ah, great.
I don't know if you've read it. It's fabulous.
I've heard that. What is your go-to snack?
Pistachios.
That's a good answer. What's your favorite time of day?
Anytime I'm smiling.
Where do you want to travel to next?
Oh, my go-to place is Paris. I go there all the time. I love that. That's, you know, very relaxing. But I've never been to Australia and New Zealand, so I really want to go
there. And lastly, what was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
You know what? My favorite meal was a meal that my mother made that I thought was her meal. We called it French chicken. It was peas. Poached lightly in butter with Boston lettuce. How exotic is that for a kid growing up in North Carolina? And a French apple tart, and the applesauce was made with cognac. And many, many, many years later, only a few years ago, I found out that that was one of Julia Child's public television menus.
Classic. That's so great. That sounds delicious. Elizabeth, it's always so wonderful to see you. I'm so happy we had a chance to talk more about you and all things barbecue, and everyone should go visit you this weekend at the Big Apple Barbecue in Madison Square Park. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Suzanne Rousseau.
Oh, thank you.
It was fun.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hi, and welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. We were just talking with Elizabeth Carmel, one of the foremost grilling and barbecue experts. Now we're turning the microphone over to Suzanne Rousseau. So,
hi there.
Hi,
how
Suzanne.
Are you?
I'm great.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. It's really nice to meet you.
It's a lovely studio. Very chic.
We're live at Roberta's, which is an old shipping container. So
yeah,
to give you
special,
a sense
very
of space.
Special.
You and your sister Michelle, who is at another event at the moment, you are the two sisters behind Two Sisters and a Meal, which is the name of both your website and your first television show.
Yes,
is that right?
Indeed it is.
You guys also have made what's probably my new favorite web series called Island Potluck. That's all about exploring Jamaica.
I love it.
I've been watching all of them.
Thank you.
On top of all that, your cookbook, which is called Caribbean Potluck, Modern Recipes from Our Family Kitchen, just came out. It was last month in May.
Yes, it came out
publish date was the 15th of May, okay, for the States and the UK.
So that is a lot. That's
we've had a busy year, yeah. I would say. Very busy.
Unbelievable. So in meeting you guys and talking about everything you're doing, I'd love to start just at the beginning. Where exactly are you guys from?
Okay, we are Jamaican sisters. Mm-hmm. Born in Jamaica, grew up in Jamaica, educated right through till high school there. We lived 4 years in Trinidad when my dad worked there. So we consider ourselves Caribbean girls, mm-hmm, but Jamaica is our birthplace. Trinidad was a very formative part of our life. We spent 4 formative years there. So the food and the flavor and the culture of Trinidad also plays into, I think, who we are as Caribbean people. And so we're from Jamaica. We grew up there. We went to university in Canada. We both
That's
came home.
Pretty different.
Yeah. A lot of Caribbean, you know, people travel and go off to school, mm-hmm, in the States, Canada, particularly Canada and the States, and obviously UK, or they stay at home. We had lots of family in Canada. My father, both my parents had brothers who lived there. So they liked the idea they had somebody to keep tabs on us. They liked that it was a university town, mm-hmm, University of Western Ontario. No distractions. So we went to university, came home straight after, and really fell into our own business, I would say. I don't think we sat and anticipated, oh, this is what we will do. I think we came from entrepreneurial parents who very much encouraged us to explore our independence and to do the things we loved. And I think that was probably their greatest gift to us as parents. And fairly soon after we returned home, I'm 2 years older than my sister, we got into a fashion business, really. We were the agents for La Perla.
Oh, wow.
We met the lady who was looking for someone to rep the line. So we opened 2 boutiques, one in Ocho Rios, one in Kingston. And so we started in fashion. We used to come and buy and carry other, you know, New York labels like Cynthia Rowley and BCBG. And from there, we sort of transitioned into food. Also, really, I would say, opportunity. My mother had a space. They wanted to do a cafe. We were there. We were always cooking. We were, you know, very good cooks in the family. My father was a serious sort of foodie. And so we said, okay, we'll just do it. And it just sort of started like that. It wasn't, I would say, you know, a lot of thought and time, yeah, put into it. And then after, it evolved from there.
Yeah, I feel like that's how a lot of the best things happen, when people just jump in and you do it. And you don't
think too hard,
it,
you know, because, yeah, I think if you think too hard, sometimes you scare yourself away, yeah, from it. So we just kind of did it. We didn't, yeah, know how. We just did.
Yeah. I've always thought, at least for me, things that I feel, you know, I'm proud of that I've accomplished, if I had known what would go into them before, I would have never have done
absolutely
them. And you guys, so you ran the restaurant, you also had a catering business,
yeah, so we,
right,
ran the restaurant for a period. We went off to the CIA and did some culinary training,
wow,
short term, and sort of expanded our knowledge, and sort of as we expanded, the restaurant expanded, so we had sort of that for a few years. Then we came out of it and went into that sort of off-premise catering, in part because running restaurants in Jamaica were challenging in terms of economically. The kind of dining out culture wasn't there. We were working at very long hours, but very little return and high overheads. Catering was a little different in how we could model the business. And we felt that we could do larger volumes, first of all, because catering is outsourced. So you brought in the staff freelance, you brought in product for the event. And we very much geared our business towards very fresh, very gourmet food that was prepared in the quality of a restaurant, which at the time was not available. And also, we had established a really good reputation by then in the business at the restaurant, and we had good contacts. And so we geared ourselves towards, corporate business, high-end weddings. We did the dinner for Prince Charles when he was there.
Wow.
We were the official caterers of World Cup cricket, so we catered some 1,500 meals a day.
Oh my God.
It was a nightmare.
That's a lot.
So we did very large, very high-end events that gave far better returns than running, at the time, a restaurant where you had overheads and high electricity, high costs for imported stuff, staffing, and even if you had 5 covers, you still had to keep it open.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's really where we spent the bulk of our career, with little different forays into little cafes and stuff. And then we did that right up until 20. Last year, I would say, was when we decided to take the plunge and really pursue what really were our dreams, mm-hmm, which was a cookbook always, and moving into, I guess, the business of food media. So TV and writing and cook and the book.
And so at the moment, you're putting all your energy, all your attention into
this,
media, the book,
yeah,
and
all of the spin-offs, because I think what we felt was we had done almost 20 years, really, by the time we took the plunge to give our full energy to it. It was very hard to do those things running a full-time business.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, anybody who's been in the food business knows that it takes everything out of you. It's a very physically demanding job, very long hours. And I think
and it never stops.
And it never stops. And I think we'd done our time in it. I think everything serves its purpose in that it prepared us, it taught us lessons. And I think my sister took a year off, came to live in Brooklyn, actually.
Oh, wow.
Round the corner from here, at Fort Greene. And while she was here, a friend of hers, Robin Moreno, our guardian angel, who was already published, actually sent, we had the synopsis, we had thought out the idea for the book for many years. The idea was like there for 10 years or more. We had tried to look at doing it as a local publication and as a foreign, and then as a self-publication. None of that felt right. We really felt we wanted it to be an international product. And the same with the show. All the ideas were there. And so she took the year off, and while she was here, this friend, Robin, sent the proposal to her agent without us really even knowing. And agent Joy Tutela from the David Black Literary Agency called and said, you know, I really like what you have. I think what you I think you have a voice here that has not been represented. I think you need to add this, that. And she gave us some instructions. Give yourself, you know, a year or two to get it figured out. But I think I'm prepared to represent you. And we were kind of like, really? And so it just sort of gave us the impetus to pursue it. We did what she recommended. We came back here last January at the end of January 2013, met with her, and she loved what we had. And she said, can you give me a completed manuscript in 6 weeks?
In 6 weeks.
And we were like,
serious?
At that point, in true Jamaican fashion, yeah, man, of course, of course.
I can just, for anyone listening who, you know, maybe if that sounds like enough time or not enough time, I work on cookbooks for a living, and that is...
It was
no
intense.
Time. That is crazy.
I think what had at that point, it was like, you know, sometimes life gives you opportunities or divine timing presents itself. And either you take the opportunity and allow the door to open, or you say, no, I can't. And I think we just said, yeah, sure, we can. We didn't know how. And so we came home. We tested the recipes, the 100 recipes. A lot of the recipes for us were things that we had cooked very regularly, though, in the years in the business. They were
doing catering.
Yeah, and we had created a lot of them. So we had them as sort of bulk recipes that we had to then just standardize and narrow down to smaller portions. We tested them all. And then we wrote the narrative and did all that. So it was a lot. I can't tell you. It was exhausting stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think
that
we
must
felt...
have been a long 6 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. And she felt... So we kind of gave it to her by the end of April. Then we did a proposal in May that was like 70 pages long. And she said she really felt that there was... The market was different. The opportunity was now. And that she wanted it out for me. And so that was sort of what we drove
us. And you did it.
And we did
it.
And
it's out. It's sitting right here. We're looking at it. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. I really encourage people to get it. And I think...
Thank you.
I grew up in New York and was actually raised primarily by a woman who's from St. Vincent. So I feel very personally attached.
Oh, so you're a Caribbean girl. Kind of. Love that.
And I'm just so happy to know that you and your sister are really making the voice for this cuisine a bit louder. And I think what you're doing is just great.
Thank you. I think for both of us, it's a very passionate and a very emotional topic, because I think for us, it felt like it was the work that we had to do. It wasn't almost like about just getting the book. It was that we felt, and I think we do feel, that we could articulate the experience of being Caribbean in a way that we didn't feel had been done, in a young, a modern, a vibrant way. I think that we could represent the food in a new way. And that was what really has always been what we wanted to do. We've always felt that history and culture and your heritage and taking those things and understanding them, but then bringing them into the modern day is very, very important. So a big part of the work, I think, for us has been both with the show and with the book to really represent that. I mean, we can cook sexy Caribbean food. It doesn't actually have to be, you know, heavy duty one pot stews of oxtail and curry goat. We never did any of that. We don't eat that way. And I feel that we have yet to make that crossover in the marketplace outside of, you know, the Caribbean. All of us who live there and work there know this. So, you know, a young woman and a young girl or a businesswoman is no different there than she's here in New York or in Paris or London. Mm-hmm. And that was what the opportunity was. And I think that's what the publishers felt they saw in us. And I think that's what Joy felt she saw in us.
Well, I'm so glad that you found them and they found you.
Yeah,
and that all
so
happened, because I think what you're doing is great and important. And I'm excited for more people to know about you guys and know about the food of, you know, where you come from. And I have a million questions about Jamaican food that I want to ask you, but unfortunately we don't have that much time. So I'm going to go into what we call the Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A, which it's the 8 questions we ask every guest. No pressure, whatever first comes to mind. So number one, sweet or salty?
Oh, God. I would take both.
Yeah. Number two, what did you have for breakfast today?
This morning was a little bit of a harrowing morning. So before I got here, I grabbed a sandwich that was a pesto, turkey and roasted cheese sandwich at the Pret-a-Manger and had a half of it.
That works.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, they're good for that moment. Number three, what are you reading right now?
Oh, God, I was a lit major, so I'm a reader. I'm actually reading Henry James' Portrait of a Lady. Which I felt like...
Just a light reading.
I just felt like I had some... Every now and again, I go back to a classic, and I hadn't read much of his work, and it just crossed my path. And I said, you know what? I need to read this. So that's what I'm reading now.
What is your go-to snack?
Well, I adore popcorn. Mm. That would be my first thing. And the second follow-up is any kind of cheese crunchies, Cheetos, anything like that. I'm obsessed with those kinds of Cheetos, cheesy things.
I identify very strongly with you. What's your favorite time of day?
I think I would say 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning when the day has begun but not yet really gotten started. I love that time.
And where do you want to travel to next?
That list is endless. I would say I very much want to go to India. Mm. Very, very much want to go to India. In part because the food I think is fantastic.
And there's a lot of crossover into it.
The crossover yeah. And then the culture and the color and the literature I love. So I think India would be my...
I think I might come with you.
Yeah.
What was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, we used to call her Mama, used to make macaroni and cheese. She would cook ground beef, we call it mince in the Caribbean, and she would do these lunches, and we'd come home from school and university and when we were children, and it would be like ackee and saltfish. She would have macaroni and cheese. She would have the mince, always just cooked her way. Nobody else can cook ground beef like her. And rice and peas and plantain. Real comfort food.
Yeah.
Not particularly sophisticated, but it's the kind of food that when I think of it, it makes me smile.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. Suzanne, thank you so much for being here today. I love finding out more about one of my favorite cuisines in the world and meeting one half of quite a pair of sisters. And thank you everyone for listening. To find Suzanne and her sister, your website is Two Sisters in the Mail.
The number two.
And Elizabeth, who we were speaking to earlier, you can find her at girlsatthegrill.com. And thank you everyone for listening. Tune in next Wednesday at 2 p.m. on The Heritage for another episode of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Yay! That was great.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.